This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up after the Queen's birthday freeze-out, how far can Collingwood go in 2018? Are there problems at Tigerland or did they just miss Dusty? We take a look at the problems down at the Saints and we cast an eye ahead to the Swans and the Eagles this week. All of that and so much more.
Shield from the corner. Stringer about to rise, met well by Martin McDonald, tip and Woody. Wow!
Walters has a bounce, open goal square, strides his way clear of Doudé, looks up, gets the protection. What a chase by Doudé!
Driving ball forward, who's at home? Stevenson turned, almost completed, kicks an absolute ripper.
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson and with me this week is Chief Football Writer Jake Nile and our new addition. You're not even a new addition now, but Peter Ryan joining us. Mature age recruit.
Yeah, very much grey mature age recruit who only comes in on a Tuesday to join the podcast.
Oh, you just wait for the special events. You're a correct blockbuster performer. Speaking of blockbuster performers, Jake, I don't think one tipster in the Age had Collingwood to win. I don't think there were many in any other media
we don't
that
have
had Collingwood to win.
We don't have
more. Well, I'm becoming the village idiot with my tipping.
Yeah. Well, you arrived as that, so yeah. What impressed you most out of the game?
Oh, Collingwood were very impressive. I actually was at their game against Adelaide in Adelaide where they upset the Crows, which is probably a bigger upset. But this was, I think this was a better performance, bearing in mind the opposition had been red hot. I think their running ability, I think if we have this discussion about whether they can win the premiership or not, Michael, we have to consider that you have to have a weapon. You have to have something that is distinctive. And if they have something that's distinctive, I suppose they've got an unorthodox forward setup around a 7-foot American, which is very unusual.
USA.
And USA chant. Yeah, I know that was quite funny. And they've got Hoskin Elliott and Stevenson and Dugowie when he plays up there. More about him later. But they cover the ground quickly. They have a running capacity.
Yeah, well, it was stark contrast when you looked at their forwards, particularly with Stevenson playing deep on Jetta, who's been a good player but struggled a little bit, and Bernie Vince and Jordan Lewis. They really exposed Melbourne's defensive setup yesterday, and Oscar McDonald on Mason Cox was just incapable of competing with him without Jake Lever to come across.
Yeah, well, I think a few clubs will find that if you end up being isolated with Mason Cox, the way he's attacking the ball now. With confidence to mark and getting up the ground and taking strong marks, kicked one from outside 50. He is
just inside,
thereabouts.
He did things yesterday that he hasn't done previously.
Yeah.
With that being the perfect example, kicked one from outside 50 or around 50, kicked a snap from a stoppage.
Yeah.
Like this is un-Mason Cox like. He was almost a running joke for a couple of years, but now he came into his own yesterday.
The thing that I thought was un-Collingwood-like was the fact that they went in against one of the best inside midfield teams and they beat them around the ball. Mm.
Yeah, I think credit to Nathan Buckley here, and you know we've been over this ground before of who thought he should go on and who thought he shouldn't, but putting Jordan Dugowie into the midfield was perfect timing. He'd not been playing as well as a forward. He'd had those 5 and 6 goal bags. They moved him to the midfield. And if Melbourne was going to have an advantage, I thought it would be with Clayton Oliver and Nathan Jones. It was very good because it sort of tipped them to a more inside, bigger bodied setup that meant them they were more competitive on the inside. And once they were beating Melbourne on the inside, they're always going to beat them on the outside. That was where Melbourne was vulnerable and where Melbourne are still vulnerable.
I think I think the interesting thing with Buckley this year, or Collingwood per se, is that they're prepared to make a move like that. Like they moved Treloar after the first couple of rounds up forward, they're actually using those forwards as substitute midfielders, side bottom, so it just gives them a flexibility that makes them hard to go.
They've got the depth of
absolutely
talent. They've got five players that can feasibly do it, and so they've got that. And this brings us perfectly to our weekly Jake disclaimer about Jordan Dugowie and the family connection to his management.
His manager's been away, so I
you asked, or it was asked early in the season, who's it more compelling for Collingwood to re-sign, Darcy Moore or Jordan Dugowie? And on the spot, I thought Moore because he is the key position player. I think it's clearly Dugowie. I think Dugowie could be anything.
Absolutely. It's a no question now. Dugowie's one of those players. I know there was his last few weeks were a little bit down on the weeks after he came back when he kicked those bags of five or six. But he's got those capacity that Dustin Martin, Nat Fyfe, Dangerfield have got, which is to go into the middle and explode. He's nowhere near that good at the moment, but he's only 21 or 22. And he can kick bags, but he can also go into the middle and explode from stoppages. It's a pretty handy trait to have.
I think he's a player that you just, you know, I know the idea was let's wait until now, until the mid-season, and let's see that the behaviours are all ongoing. I think the behaviour that he's illustrated is that he's an elite talent and they're hard to get and hard to keep and you've got to keep him. So I think he just has to be re-signed and I'm sure...
If you're St Kilda, we're going to talk about St Kilda more, but how hard do they go?
Oh, really hard. But if you're Dugowie, why go to St Kilda? Why would you go there?
Money.
Yeah. Well, but equally, money, if you're a club, do you want a player that's only coming to you for money?
Well, you take
in their position, you want a player. I think yes, you just want the player.
Yeah. Before we get onto them, though, the Demons. This was the big test for them again. They'd only beaten Adelaide really of quality opposition. They should have beaten Geelong in round one. They've only beaten Adelaide, but that was
disappointing.
Off Broadway in Alice Springs.
And Adelaide's lost a couple since.
Doesn't look quite the opponent now. But this was the game that they had to win. Big crowd, big event, a lot of expectation. On a roll, playing great footy. What did it say about them, Jake?
Well, I think the biggest thing it said is that they're a team that when the game's played on their terms, they're devastating.
Yeah.
When things go a little bit, and it only takes a couple of degrees, which Simon Goodwin more or less alluded to, then they can be hurt back the other way badly. I thought, watching the game from the press box, that their failure to cover the corridor. Collingwood were able to take chances with the ball that, and it clearly was deliberate, that Melbourne allowed them to get devastating counterattacks. I was staggered by some of the chances. Coast to coast. There were two coast to coast goals. Now, the number of, there's a statistic in footy that getting from your defensive 50 to your forward 50, it's about 21% now. It used to be 50% chance of getting there. Oh, I'd like to see what Collingwood, I don't know what that number was, but I'd say it was high.
The other thing they did was win the ball out of the middle early, and that put their defence under pressure. And I know the back six, the whole ground is a defensive system, but their back six is always vulnerable, and even more so now that Lever's gone. It's always been a worry, I think, in terms of them being a premiership contender, because Jordan Lewis is slow.
Yeah.
Great ball user, but he's covering a man. He gets exposed. Bernie Vince, having both of them down there, is a trouble. And as I mentioned before, McDonald's, he's just off
Oscar.
Yeah. They're going to have to consider coming up with a method that doesn't depend on winning the ball first. They're going to, all of the teams that seem to have the best finals records mostly rely on having a system to win back the ball. And Melbourne seem to rely heavily on winning first use. Well, now, I know we say that about
because they have been. You know,
well, they have been. They've got those good players like Oliver who
can
do that.
They seem to push up very high too, which is one of the reasons that you can, when you get through, it's open ground and you can really, really push them. But they were...
They obliterate ordinary midfields when they face a equally competitive midfield. And Collingwood probably beat them by more than we expected yesterday in the midfield. They struggle. Geelong, Richmond, Collingwood, the games, Hawthorn even, the games that they've lost, it's because the ball spent a lot of time in their back half.
Do you think, therefore, it's structural like that? I mean,
do we revisit the Tom McDonald question?
Sorry?
Do we revisit the Tom McDonald question?
I think that...
No,
that
not when he kicks.
Six.
Six. Jesse didn't really do much.
It's a difficult one because Lever, as much as they'll say it hasn't hurt them, it could be a devastating blow because they still have to work out how to actually replace him. And Joel Smith's only playing his third game. He was okay.
They're one game into working that out, though, to be fair to them.
That's right. So we have to give it time to actually see the actual impact on it. But they went hard for Lever because they had a deficiency there.
Yeah. But do we also then look at, you know, it was the last round last year, the same opponent. They were favoured. All they had to do was win against a team that was, you know, well outside the eight, and they couldn't do it then. These big moments, they've not been able to seal the deal.
Oh, look, there's
is it structural, or is there? Do you think there's something to that? That mental sort of frailty.
They're not a big game. They haven't got experience in these. But
the Collingwood's got a massive
games.
Advantage over other clubs. I got a text from a person around footy who said Collingwood's got a huge advantage in playing in these big crowd games all the time. Their young players like Stevenson get by the time Stevenson's played. To put it in perspective, he's played every game, so that's his 12th game. He's probably played in front of 50,000 people more than how many people in the competition. Yeah. So by the time he gets to the finals this year, he will have already played in front of 60, 70, 80 plus thousand a number of times. So Melbourne, they are getting there, and it's going to take a little bit longer. Some of their best players, as I've pointed out before, are in their early 20s. Like Petraka was down. Hogan was down. Yeah. When these guys are mid-20s, the consistency every week should be there.
The other game that feels like a long time ago now, but the Tigers, was it a loss they had to have? Was there something more to it? Do you think it was the Dusty fact, the Dusty being out?
Dusty's a big whoop.
Dusty's a massive loss. Yeah, and what it underscores is Richmond have had a charmed run since right through 2017 and into 2018, and the number
with
of games
the big four,
with the big four, and they've missed one game. I think it's three games total until Dusty missed that game. So Cochin missed one this year, and prior to that, they played every game. Other than that, they played every game, all for the big four. And look, you take out him, and then Alex Rance is capable of having those indifferent games occasionally. I thought he played pretty well, to be honest, and I just thought they lacked that bite around the ball. Port got on top of them really only for...
Yeah, wasn't it? They weren't
out
of the game.
It was like just on the whole ugly footy debate, apart from that second quarter where Port really ignited the game and moved the ball well and there was some excitement in the crowd and it pulsated at the ground, I thought it was a terrible second half to watch. Yeah. It was like a stalemate.
Yeah.
The other thing was Richmond were uncharacteristically fumbly, which is... sounds obvious, but they're just their clean ball movement when they got it forward of centre, which has defined them in the last 18 months. Butler, Higgins, Castagna was okay, but they just fluffed mistakes or made mistakes, basically, which cost them. Because they're only a goal or two off for most of the game.
Yeah, I wouldn't write too much against Richmond for that. And we're pointing out they are a bit like the MCG. They've won 15. Well, and the analogy has been drawn with Rafael Nadal, that they are to the MCG what Nadal is to Roland Garros.
Do they pinch their shorts out of their bottom, do they, Jake?
I'm not sure.
Well, coming up, we'll have a look at the Cats and the Roos in the Scott Cup.
You're listening to The Age, Real Footy Podcast.
Payne, Abbott might go all the way. One bounce. He's inside 50, he steadies, he shoots, and he goes!
There it is.
There is the king!
Well, welcome back, Gary Ablett. We thought, was it just the one-off brilliance of him again to get himself up for the Suns? But no, comes home again and he was everything again that we expect of Gary. He was fantastic.
Well, he was almost better than we expect of Gary these days because he applied 8 tackles and some of his tackling pressure was actually critical.
I think he put on 8 tackles in 8 years.
I know. He actually was just fierce around the football early and he was even protecting for Joel Selwood, who obviously had a tag on Jacobs.
Do you think he'd been protecting his body?
Absolutely. I think he's actually got confidence in his body now that he didn't have. Particularly if you watched him against Collingwood and the week after, he was just floating around the contest, whereas now he's in the middle of contests and he's using his hands to such great devastating effect.
I'm sure we'll talk about Richmond and Geelong, you know, coming up this week, but the effect that an Ablett doing the team things could have on that, on younger players in that club is considerable, Peter.
Yeah, and also the effect of having Ablett capable around the football in terms of letting Dangerfield play predominantly forward is enormous for their structure as well, because it just means that if they're getting supply to Dangerfield, he's possibly the most devastating forward in the game in terms of one out.
There is that similarity.
The guy called Buddy.
Yeah. Well, apart from Buddy. Yes.
There is that similarity to the conversation we were just having about Collingwood, saying, well, they've got the depth of these players to be able to rotate through these roles, whether it's De Goey and Treloar. It's Geelong completely. You know, Mitch Duncan has lifted his game in the last couple of weeks from a slow start to the season. And that's really, really important to them because you've got that depth in there that it's not so painful when danger's not there.
Absolutely. And Duncan does the defensive things. But as you say, if Ablett can start doing the team things, it will have an infectious effect on the rest of the group.
Yeah, sort of a bit like Scott Pendlebury going to to Cripps and doing these. It sets an example that's powerful for the playing group. Probably the other thing is, I do have this feeling though that Scott Selwood is still, that Geelong will go as far as Scott Selwood. I've got this strange theory that he is the key to how well, whether Geelong are just in the finals making up the numbers, or whether they're a real chance of winning the premiership.
Yeah.
Just with his defensive ability in a team that has a lot of players that are not renowned for that.
Well, even on Saturday, if they say they're in danger of losing that game, they have no one to put a clamp on Sean Higgins, who is the only player who is potentially going to take the game away from them. And Scott Selwood could be that player if they're up deep into the finals against a team that's, you know, matches them in the midfield.
Let's imagine they're playing Scott Selwood on Dusty in a big final, in a preliminary final or a qualifying final or a grand final. It could completely change the tone of that game. Or Cochin, yeah.
He did previously say that they got it wrong with Danger Woodlett, that it was actually they got the wrong cell in there. He's the more important one. I don't think he was joking.
Yeah.
Of course he was. Well, you raise the Tigers, that becomes the sort of mouth-watering game. And to an extent, do you query Geelong's form down there? Because it was at the ground they play so well. Richmond lose at the ground away from home.
Well, Geelong are playing Geelong are Federer at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
And this is Nadal on clay, and they're going to play at Nadal's home turf with the Tigers. So,
but they'd backed themselves in until that qualifying final last year. Geelong had an absolute wood on Richmond, and I reckon they went in. You can't go in overconfident, but they thought.
How can you go into that in a final?
I think they did. I think they thought they had Richmond's measure at that particular time. They don't anymore. So this is a challenge to put it back to where they think the equilibrium should be, which is their
I think of the games that have been played this year, this is one of the ones that I'm looking most forward to, because I think it has potentially huge consequences. And also just to make the top four.
There were potentially huge consequences out of another game from the weekend, and that was the Saints. That was, as they keep hitting new lows. That
was just horrendous first quarter. Did you see
it
that
was
first
an unwatchable
quarter?
Game.
It was so low on pressure. Sydney were like an under 15 team dominating another team that's just gone into the wrong grade, basically.
Yeah.
There was no defensive pressure. Buddy was seemingly one out. It was a listless performance.
Yeah, and the thing is, St Kilda's hallmark under Richo, under Alan Richardson, has been pressure. That's probably been when they've played well, that's been their sort of defining.
Where's that gone? Why has that gone?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, does it shoot back to the
Richmond.
Coach?
It was like round 16. And they were well up. And they've won three games since then. Oh, that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
So it can't just be. I mean, the talent's there. They've got the players. They've got players enough there to do that.
I don't think Alan Richardson has coached well this year. I'm not saying he isn't the man for the job going forward, but he's coached poorly this year. He doesn't seem, particularly going back to the game down at Simmons where they played Geelong or whatever it's called now, GMHBA, he had numbers around the footy, no numbers forward of the ball. He didn't have enough confidence in his players to back himself, and I reckon that's continued and become infectious throughout the year. He doesn't appear to back his list. And now it's gone into that spiral and effect, and I reckon it's a real knock on him as a coach. And he has to overcome that.
What do they do?
Well, they can't sack him mid-season. I'm strongly of the view that there's absolutely no way, unless there is a mass player revolt and things are just completely untenable, the coach in this instance should not be removed. He should see the season out. St Kilda should be reviewing this very, very thoroughly. They now have two clubs that they can look to. Richmond in the end of 2016 after their annus horribilis, and Collingwood after their fourth year out of the finals and a declining performance last year, reviewed both coaches, kept the coaches, changed things around them. So I'm not saying necessarily that has to be the case. Obviously, there's things like payouts, et cetera, that St Kilda have to weigh up. But they now have a template make change.
That would also seem self-evident, because it was only a few months ago that they were certain that they had the right coach and re-signed him for another 2 years. So
they overestimated their list.
They did, but clearly they've already made the decision, we have the right coach. So they have to keep with the coach, But they don't have to keep with those around them and the rest of the structure of the football department. But you're right, the list is fundamentally also problematic.
And one out clause, I suppose, for Saturday night's performance was, and they're not big name players beyond Jake Carlisle, but Jake Carlisle, Jaron Geary and Dylan Roberton were all out of their defensive half.
Yeah.
And they're important to that club.
Carlisle's just about their best player.
Carlisle's their best player. Geary and Roberton were two of their best players last year and a captain and in the leadership group.
And there's a Rewalt.
And the Rewalt and Montagna factor. So there's five players.
Probably of their best side last year, you'd probably say they've lost five of their best eight.
And Billings was dropped. And
he got 53 in the twos.
Yeah.
He deserved to be dropped.
Thing is they're going to have to make a big decision on Billings. They're going to have to decide, do they keep Billings or put him up for trade and try and get into the first round of the draft? Because I think Billings is a player that to the right club, he'd be a good player in a good team. And they have to decide, are we going to work with this guy or are we going to sell him to try and get into the draft or get into a trade?
How long before we are a good team that therefore he helps us?
Well, he's kind of in the Jack Watts category.
Saying what you're saying.
Melbourne took too long to get rid of Jack Watts.
Yeah.
Potentially they don't make the same mistake. They get some value for Billings, which is high value, and start again.
Well, he can play. So you know,
he can play, but he's not going to take them. He's a nice player.
Where does he suit?
He suits a team that needs polish and outside. I mean, Melbourne possibly. You know, you look at Melbourne.
How would Gaff be at Melbourne yesterday? Would have been pretty handy.
He'd be pretty handy. So
Giants, yeah. Not that he'd necessarily.
Well, the Giants
have
got a lot of talent on the outside. I don't think the Giants is the right fit. You've got to think of teams that just need that bit of North Melbourne. North Melbourne would be a classically good fit. North Melbourne have got a lot of they're relying on Higgins. He could actually sort of take a bit of the baton from Higgins.
That's a big call. Would you do it?
I'd look at what you can get.
What did you make of Freer?
I thought they were tremendous. And I thought that when teams look at trading, we talk about trading picks, Adam Chera,
yeah,
a young Victorian player, and Andrew Brayshaw, the second Brayshaw, also very impressive. The value, if Fremantle turn it around in the next couple of years and play finals and get back up the ladder, they'll look back on that draft where they got those two top five picks, one from the Gold Coast, God help us.
For Lockie Weller, nowhere near worth pick two, no
and
disrespect
they knew that.
To him. Yeah. No,
they knew that, but they needed. Yeah. They had someone that actually wanted to come to them.
No,
and I think that, you know, and I put out a tweet on this, is that the effect of winning without Fife could be magical for those young players. Like, I think it's actually well. Ross Lyon would be secretly, I think he'd be delighted that Fife got suspended.
He'd be delighted, Jake.
Because he's never been big on Brownlows anyway, and I think the boost that group will get from winning without Fife. Against in a game they weren't expected to win, albeit the Adelaide side was threadbare.
Chera is one of the few of the top 20 picks yet to extend. He's not going to re-sign at least until the end of this year. Interesting player for Fremantle to have because he is a very, very talented footballer.
Just as the Fife absence was made that win more meritorious, equally Heppel going down so early... in a brutal bum.
Wasn't it great? Look, I don't like to see players get concussed. I want to retract that. I thought to see Luke Hodge still playing it just shows you what an extraordinary.
And there was nothing untoward about it. He was playing the ball. He's actually coming to either tackle or get the ball, Heppel, but just bang, just steamrolled. But for him to be off and be one down in the game, and I actually thought Brisbane was going to win that. I thought they were ready to win.
Did you tip them?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, foolishly.
Hmm.
Yeah, look, good on Essendon. There's been a series of steps forward in the last few weeks and then a step back. They just got to find that consistency. They have got a fair bit of talent, I think. Their midfield, though, is still where... what they do in the midfield each week, Peter, will decide how they go.
Yeah, and you would say, given it takes time for recruits to actually find their feet, Adam Sard, Stringer and Smith have been very good acquisitions, particularly in the last few weeks now that Stringer and Sard are starting to get moving.
Time now for Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Welcome to the latest edition of
Just Between Us, Sam McClure and One Piece, Daniel Cherney with you as always. Daniel, welcome. How was your long weekend?
Sam, it was not too bad. It was just
regular sort of excitement for you?
Pretty regular.
Didn't do anything sort of fun or?
What did I do? Saw a movie.
It's pretty outrageous.
Ocean's 8, not bad.
Yeah, sort of high octane weekend for Daniel Cherney.
It was, then I was working.
What have you got for us, Just Between Us?
Sam, Just Between Us, Chris Mayne, having a bit of a resurgence at Collingwood this season.
Well, he couldn't have gone the other way.
Well, that could have. In fact, there was a bit of talk that they were looking at trading him at the end of last year. But
well, that wasn't talk. They tried
that, to. They did try to trade him at the end of last
that
year.
That was Just Between Everyone.
But Just Between Us, he has been actually doing some umpiring of junior footy of late.
No, why?
He has.
Really?
And Just Between Us, he recently, let's believe, umpired a match involving Nathan Buckley's son, Jet.
Wow.
Yes.
That is almost the best Just Between Us you've brought to the table, I think. That's a great one.
I'm not sure if he necessarily gave him any extra free kicks, but then again, perhaps.
Noise of affirmation from the coach.
Well, I mean.
So you're implying.
It's a little bit of a tricky position if you're umpiring your coach's son.
Yeah.
But, Chris Mayne getting involved.
Okay. Daniel, Just Between Us, there was some raised eyebrows yesterday at the MCG when a player who has just signed a new contract arrived to the car park in a brand new pimped out Mustang with black 19-inch rims.
This is a guy that kicked 6 goals yesterday.
And it's fair to say that he's walking the walk and talking the talk at the moment. So more power to him for using some of his early contract money on a brand new car, a muscle car.
Every Tom, Dick and Harry, there's always something there. Sam, Just Between Us, speaking of yesterday at the MCG, a fantastic day. Obviously, all the money raised for M&D research, just an outstanding occasion. 17 of the 18 coaches there. 17 of them, we believe, were happy to pay their own way. In particular, but Just Between Us, there is strong talk that one coach,
Daniel,
did request that his transport to the venue get paid by another authority.
Transport being airfare?
You could probably infer that.
And another authority being the AFL.
I'm not necessarily sure it was the AFL. Might have been perhaps the MCC got involved. But whoever it was, eyebrows were raised. Sam.
Let the cobblers cobble.
Sam, I'm not sure.
Fascinating unit you are, Daniel Cherney.
Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Like what you're hearing? Tell your mates. The Age Real Footy Podcast.
Ground level, Parker gets a handball back to Big Sinclair. They've got their second.
Welcome back. And Callum Sinclair, he's grown another leg as a player. They've been looking for the ruckman and he's made the position his own.
Classic case of opportunity being given to him with Naismith coming down, and he's making the most of it, isn't he? I mean, he's a player who came from West Coast, probably from nowhere, and then was entering into a trade before we really thought he was ready to even have the entitlement to be traded. He's doing well.
And they really need him to do well. Like, if he wasn't doing well, they'd be in a hell of a lot of trouble in the ruck.
I think it's a good point, though, from the start, which is that it felt like Sydney had more faith in him than he had.
Absolutely.
And it's only taken till now for him to actually have the same sort of faith in his own ability. And he's now approaching, we talked about Mason Cox earlier, he's attacking the ball, expecting to mark it he's actually strong. He didn't play as a strong player previously. He's pushing people over and getting, owning the ball, demanding it.
He's got a bit of attitude too, hasn't he now? He's starting to spruik a few things and feel like he belongs, which is what you want a big man to be doing, imposing yourself on the game.
And he now plays against West Coast.
Yeah, and the Swans once again seem to have the better end of a trade. If you look at that Jetta trade with Not that I think the needs at West Coast, I think we're completely right to do that deal. But yeah, that game is a big
Well, one. He wouldn't be, the fact is he wouldn't probably be getting a game this year at West Coast. I mean, Lycett and Nat Nui are terrific. And I'd say they've been a better combination than Sinclair. Sinclair wouldn't have got a look in ahead of Lycett.
No, that's true. No,
it's a sensible decision. I mean, West Coast.
Apart from that year where Nat Nui and Lycett.
Well, last year he would have played, and he may have, who knows what would have happened last year, you know, if he'd been there and he could have found this sort of form last year and we wouldn't be having this conversation. But my point being that they've not really lost out West Coast by when you
no,
say
no, they had excess ruckman, didn't they?
They had excess and they're incredibly talented.
Well, the other thing it shows is you can take okay players, which he was at West Coast, put them into a good system, which West Coast is a good system, but Sydney, they just make an okay player play a role very, very well, which separates the good clubs from the ordinary clubs.
Well, if value adding.
If we were unsure about the quality, well, we're quite sure about the quality of Sydney's opponent from last weekend with St Kilda. This will be a real test then to see where they are. Sydney, it's at home. West Coast Eagles.
Yeah, West Coast have not done well at
not
Sydney.
That ground. Yeah, they have ground. Done well on the road this year, but not.
Yes, but that ground is different. It's a circle, so it'll be very interesting. And let's hope we get some goals kicked and some ratings. For that game, given all the discussion of ugly footy, the Swans have been involved in some not great games this year. But getting them into games on Friday night where there's a bit of an occasion, I think, is important.
Well, it's a rebooting of the famous Sydney West Coast rivalry as well. But that article you wrote last week, which was fascinating, speaking to Tim Warner about ratings and goals, was a real just reminder to a lot of clubs that there's no free kicks in footy. You actually need to pay the piper.
Well, I think also that a lot of people have been critical of Tim Warner, you know, in social media saying it's all commercial. But I think people have to understand, yes, he's talking out of a vested interest, of course, but people have to understand if the money isn't there from the broadcaster, then some of the clubs are going to struggle to survive.
Oh, absolutely. But I thought the irony was that the team that he's been on the board of is not playing the most attractive football. Ugly footy. They are. They're one of the culprits. And it may not always be them as the instigator. They just coincidentally happen to be in a lot of ugly games. And he's on the board, was on the board. So they may do well to
the one
plus
his
the fixture. The other thing is the fixture. The fixture this year, Melbourne are not playing. They're playing Friday night against Port Adelaide after the bye, and they don't play another Friday night game. Yeah. I think they play one for the year. Collingwood Football Club are not playing on Friday night. I don't think unless they put them there on round 23, I don't think they've got another one for the rest of the year. Peter, you've got a theory on this, on how you, it's like an investment portfolio.
Yeah, well, the theory is simple. If it was, if you're a fund investor and you're developing the fixture on the same basis, I mean, you need to spread your portfolio across a number of assets. And what they've done is they've invested heavily in Carlton, which you would rate as so highly speculative, it was almost in the same thing as the interest-free loans or low-doc loans that they had, sorry. That was basically what it is. You're just throwing money into a space that was very low chance of yielding any results.
As far as Michael Lewis books are concerned, we're happy to go with Moneyball, but The Big Short is taking it a bit far in footy terms.
Well, what I'm saying is every club should have a couple of games on a Friday night.
What about Gold Coast and GWS?
Well, Gold Coast should have had one in the last 6 years. They haven't had one. I'm not saying
maybe
they should have one
Geelong
now.
Maybe against Geelong with Gary.
Yeah. I mean, even people could live with one. But I think the fact that Carlton's got four and Melbourne's got one is ridiculous. St Kilda
played
Carlton in a couple of weeks.
They have excuses, which you've spoken to them about.
But they don't hold water when Melbourne doesn't have. They said it's because of the Anzac Day and Queen's Birthday and difficulties of timing. Well, Melbourne was always going to be one of the watchable teams this year. And how many Friday nights do they get in the back half of the year?
I mean, you talk about Sydney with ugly footy, but Buddy's the one draw card. You're always going to tune in.
Yeah, you are. You'll be tuning in to Geelong Richmond too.
Mm.
We touched on them before, but it's sort of almost a season-shaping game, isn't it? It's two top four teams. Both, you know, Richmond, the query will be about the venue and each side's ability to
There's also, Gleese, there's also a pressure for top two.
Yeah.
Particularly for Richmond. You sort of think about Richmond playing against the Eagles or Sydney maybe on the road.
Mm.
You just think, well, I think they could win. I think the Sydney ground would actually suit them better than Perth or Adelaide. The narrow grounds will find them out a bit. But that's part of the stakes as well.
Yeah. You know what the other thing we'll be watching closely is the ruck duel there. I thought Nankervis, that's starting to become an issue for Richmond.
Mm.
And it's been an issue for Geelong. Rhys Stanley was okay on Saturday, but they still haven't worked out that Zach Smith, Rhys Dunley, Stanley conundrum.
And do you think Geelong will go after a ruckman, Pete?
Absolutely. Even Chris Scott, I think, alluded to it.
He has said that, hasn't he?
Yeah. There's no doubt they'll go after a ruckman because it's their big glaring hole.
Do you think they'll do a Scott brother trade with Braden Pruce?
He'd be the...
Could you see that? They did a McIntosh deal at one point.
Yeah, they just haven't got it right. They've tried to lure ruckman who have, obviously, Stanley, Smith, McIntosh. They just haven't got one since Ottens that's actually fitted the bill for them. But watching Cochin on Friday night going up in the ruck, it just made me think, how long can Richmond keep doing this? And I'm not sure they can.
I tell you what will happen. If someone wins the flag, if Collingwood win the flag, you know, heaven help those who don't follow them. If Collingwood win the flag with Mason Cox playing as the second ruckman, people will look at this completely differently again. That's how it's footy. Yeah. Footy's gone against second ruck. If they can play forward,
how do you
still
expect to have Trent Cotchin, for example, you raised before, going up against Mason Cox? Your second ruck can't be going up against a 7 foot tall player. You can't have the midfielder doing it.
You can't. And
other than
your
just saying, well, we'll just rope it. We'll just let
him. Well, I think what you'd do too is you don't bother if you're in the position of having that mismatch of the very tall player like Cox. Why wouldn't you, against a midfielder, why wouldn't you just grab it and kick it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or thump it 35 metres. Don't even bother to try
Clark
and tap
Keating.
It. Yeah, just thump it 30 metres to centre-half forward.
Well, the other thing, they shouldn't be using a blue-chip stock like, and I hate this economics, but like Cochin. It should be Grigg last year. They need someone like Townsend.
Oh, that was the
Townsend. Like, you don't throw Cochin, for God's sake. He wants to get the ball.
Dangerfield went into the ruck against Essendon. I'm not watching that thinking, what if he doesn't knee here?
Well, that's what the Duck said. They asked him how many hitouts he'd had when they reviewed his stats. He goes, you don't use a Ferrari to play off field. I think Dennis might have used that one. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. So a big thank you to you, Jake and Pete, and to you listeners for joining us this week. Thanks also to Channel 7 and to Fox Footy for the audio we've used in this episode. And as always, thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on Monday.